This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 94-year-old Willis Shepherd of Bakersfield, California. Originally from Huron, South Dakota, he spent nearly half of his life as an electrician in Carmel on the Monterey Peninsula. But during World War II, he was a long way from there. He was on the USS Texas, a battleship that you can actually still visit in Houston. In fact, they just had a big celebration there marking the ship's 100th birthday. If you've seen Clint Eastwood's movies, well, there's another Carmel guy for you. His movies, The Flags of Our Fathers or Letters from Iwo Jima, you've actually seen the USS Texas. She played herself in those two films. Mr. Shepherd talked about Iwo Jima, of course, and we heard about his experience on D-Day at Omaha Beach, too. But the last major battle that Texas was involved in was Okinawa in the spring of 1945. What do you remember about that?
Okinawa was also a tough island. It was where a typhoon came in when we were there, and all the ships, or most of the ships anyway, took off and headed for China. Several ships got washed up on the beach there in Okinawa, and so we all got out of there. It was really, we were about 4 days, we couldn't even go on a main deck. It was just, our ship was underwater as much as it was on the top of the water.
Rocking and rolling a little bit?
Oh, yeah. It was tough.
Well, again, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. And how do you handle a situation like that? Is there anything you can do?
We couldn't eat, set up tables to eat. We had to sit in wherever you could sit and just hold it on your lap because the ship was rolling and pitching. And it was a tough situation for about 4 days.
Were you scared?
Yeah, I was a little scared. I was more scared than normally, though.
Well, and I guess the other thing I should bring up is, I think while all that's going on, especially there in the Pacific later in the war, I think you had a particular motivation for getting back to the States, didn't you? Wasn't there someone you wanted to meet up with again?
Well, yeah. My future wife, I only knew her through my sisters there in Washington, D.C., and I probably only saw her about 4 different times. I just thought I was going to marry her when I got home.
Tell me how you met.
I had 2 sisters living in this apartment house, and she lived in there in the same apartment house, and they introduced me to her, and I don't know, I fell for her the minute I saw her. Thought, well, someday I'm going to marry her, and I did.
And you mentioned earlier, after Iwo Jima and Okinawa, you end up in the Philippines, and that's where you found out the war was over, and that was a hallelujah day. What do you remember about that? How'd you find out, and what did everybody on your ship decide to do to celebrate?
They announced it over the loudspeaker that the Japanese had surrendered. Of course, everybody just hoot and hollered for hours. I don't think we went to bed till about 2 in the morning.
I don't want to be melodramatic, but and if there's some other close calls you remember, I'm sure we'd all like to hear about it, but do you ever sit there and say, boy, I was at Normandy, I was at Iwo Jima, I was at Okinawa. If I didn't survive all that, never would have come back to marry her. The 2 kids and the 4 grandkids and the 4 great-grandkids wouldn't be here. Has that ever crossed your mind?
Yeah, it has. It seems like history, though, now.
What do you think the reason for all that is? I mean, if you have those thoughts, do you feel like somebody was looking out for you, or there was a plan for your life, or is it just happenstance, or how do you make sense of that?
Oh, I thank the Lord for watching over me, I'll tell you that. Yes, I do.
Was there one moment throughout your time in the Navy that you look back and say, yeah, I really feel like God was looking out for me here?
Yeah, I think so. I think several times. Whenever we went on invasion, you never know what's going to happen. So you always kind of think back in your head, well, I wonder if I'm going to get through this or not, or if we are. Of course, we're always thinking about the ship being sunk. That's one big thing that's in your mind, because you have these submarines with torpedoes, and you never know when one of those is going to cut loose. And I've seen ships that were bombed from the air, like the battleship New Mexico was hit with a 500-pound bomb. As a matter of fact, it was it was in Hawaii when we were there. We just came from the Atlantic, and of course, those guys were telling us that you won't have a chance with that old tub that you guys are on. And anyway, we didn't say too much to them because we knew it was going to be a little rough out there. Anyway, they got fixed up after they took that 500-pound bomb and came back out there, and they got hit with a suicide plane. So you never know when something like that's going to happen.
Yeah, and in fact, that first attack you're talking about killed the New Mexico's commanding officer, as well as 29 others. The kamikaze attacks that came later, as you referenced, killed another 54. And between those two incidents, one at Luzon and the later one at Okinawa, more than 200 men aboard the New Mexico were wounded. And that was a battleship just like yours. So again, it underscores how easily it could have happened to you. Yeah, we talked about your wife a little bit, but another thing that I think reminds us, you know, as we look at our lives today, it's so hard for us to understand the reality of a worldwide war like that. But it's really about families and real people. And you had your only brother serving in the army in Europe. Did you ever have any news about how he was doing? Did you wonder if he was going to make it home?
No, I knew he was in Germany. That's about all I knew. Nobody knew too much about their own family. My mother informed me that he was in Germany, and that's about all I knew.
When you think back about it all now, whether it's you or your brother or the guys that you knew on your ship or the guys who didn't come home from the war, what do you take pride in? What do you think the rest of us who weren't alive then need to know about your generation and what you accomplished?
Well, I don't know. After seeing those cemeteries over there, I saw a German cemetery over there that wasn't kept up to standards at all. It was just a horrible mess. And I saw the Luxembourg cemetery where Patton was buried, and it was the most beautiful thing you ever saw. That's when my wife and I went over there. I think it was in 1970, my wife and I went over there, and we saw Germany and Austria and Belgium. And
doing something like that, or going to Washington, D.C. with honor flight, does ever make you wonder what the world would look like if you guys didn't do what you did?
Well, yeah, you think about it, but what do you do? You've done your best. So.
What are you personally proud of in terms of your service to our country? What do you take pride in? What are you thankful for?
I just take pride in being in the service and doing my share. I felt that I probably done everything that I could have done. I admire all the people, and I feel sorry for all the guys that didn't make it. That's the whole problem. They talk about Memorial Days, and the guys that didn't make it are the ones that should be memorialed.
Was there anyone that you knew pretty well that died during the war?
Yes, I had a friend that I lived with in San Diego for a year, Phil Hafner. He was in the Army, and he was killed in Italy.
So when Memorial Day rolls around every year, that's one of the things you think about is Phil?
Yeah, I do.
Tell me about Honor Flight. What was that like for you to get on a plane with these other veterans and go see the memorial built for you and your generation?
I really enjoyed that trip. Of course, I'd been around Washington for several times, but I never had seen any of the memorials when I was. They were never built when I was there. So I really enjoyed all the memorials. The World War II memorial, especially, they all impressed me.
Was there one part of it? Because, you know, I've talked to a lot of guys, and some guys find some value in finding the name of their state on the pillar, and I'm sure you saw South Dakota and California there, probably Texas, since you were on the Texas. Some guys talk about the fountains, the Wall of Gold Stars, memorializing the more than 405,000, like Phil, who didn't come home from the war, and then those little storyboards that capture different parts of the war. Was there one element of that memorial that kind of held the most meaning or most emotion for you?
Oh, probably those 4,000 gold stars. But I enjoyed all the different states. That was very impressive. The whole thing was impressive to me.
And I'm sure along the way, whether you guys were changing planes in Phoenix or somewhere or coming back here to Bakersfield, I'm sure there are a lot of people in red, white, and blue that made you feel pretty special. What was the end result of that whole experience? How did it make you feel about what you did?
Well, Phoenix was very impressive. I never shook so many hands in my life in 2 days. Those Phoenix people really came out. Well, even in Bakersfield here, when we landed in Bakersfield, they had a high school, I guess it was high school, orchestra there, and hundreds of people there, and it was very challenging.
Challenging to keep your eyes dry?
Yeah, right.
Well, Mr. Shepherd, I want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us the story that only you could tell us. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you think we should know about World War II and what you and all those other Americans did?
I think we covered pretty much what I was involved in.
What keeps you going? Because you're 94, but you're still driving. You're still doing yard work. Looks like you've got as much or more energy than your dog, Polly, here. What's your secret?
Well, I don't know. Everybody tells me it's the genes. My mother and my wife's mother both were 97 when they died. My grandfather was 98, and my grandmother was 96, so maybe it is genes. But I don't know. I just take care of myself and do whatever's necessary.
Well, you're going to have to beat all of them, right? You're going to have to win that competition?
I don't know whether I'm going to beat them or not.
Well, you're a winner in my book, Willis Shepherd, 94 years old. And speaking of winners, if you've been listening to the show in recent weeks, you've heard about a contest. We honored the legacy of Louis Zamperini after he died at the beginning of July. All throughout the month, I welcomed entries, with Universal Pictures coming out with the movie version of Louis' life story, Unbroken. It'll hit theaters on Christmas Day. Universal Studios Hollywood gave me 4 theme park tickets to give away here on Hometown Heroes, so I asked you to send in what Louis Zamperini's Unbroken story means to you. A lot of you have read the book. Others just heard Louis here on the show. And I want to thank all of you who sent in your thoughts. The winning entry came from a very loyal Hometown Heroes listener who listens to the show on KNZR in Bakersfield. He's 14 years old. His name is Ethan Lockman. And here's what he wrote. I believe Louis Zamperini displayed the spirit of an American hero. That's his opening line. And Ethan continues, on pondering the definition of hero, I thought, a hero is a person admired for brave and sacrificial actions serving above and beyond the call of duty. That being said, who does not want to be like the person that they have raised up to the stature of hero? If that is true, could that person's subtitle not be role model? Yes. But what is the definition of role model? I would say it is this, one who exhibits character so just and noble that it is worthy of being followed. True heroes, whom all freedom-loving humans esteem, possess an internal passion that comes from deep inside. This passion is reflected in their actions and serves as an example for the generations to follow. Those who wrote our Constitution were the brave pioneers who founded a unique nation with liberty and justice for all. But those who, like Mr. Zamperini, defended it against its enemies in the Second World War and the other wars in which our freedoms were challenged, who answered the call of duty and who gave their all for the country that they loved, they are heroes who should be proclaimed. Now that our World War II heroes are passing so quickly, should we not aspire to be the role models for the next generation that they are to us? Mr. Zamperini displayed all the character of a true hero, not only in his service to his country, but in his example of one who continued to exhibit his true spirit in returning to the country where he was persecuted. He forgave and loved his enemies and was sincere about it. The love which he demonstrated was unmatched. He was a true American hero. We will all miss him, but we will always remember his unbroken spirit. Yeah, amen, Ethan. You know, when a 14-year-old writes something like that, it tells you our latest generation is learning something from our greatest generation, doesn't it? Ethan is also starting to interview veterans on his own, too. Music to my ears. Congratulations, Ethan, and congratulations to his homeschool teacher, his mom, Lisa. You're doing something right there. I hope you guys have an awesome time at Universal Studios Hollywood. And if you just heard that essay and you think it's something you'd like to share, I do have it posted at hometownheroesradio.com. We're out of time this time, but join us again next time when we meet a Native American veteran who was on Oahu on December 7th, 1941, went on to be wounded three separate times during World War II, and it hasn't slowed him down one bit. I'll look forward to that conversation. And until then, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.